So, Antoinette, I'll just say that again for the recording, that it's just thank you for the analysis. It's really nice to see it in more developed fashion than I think what we've seen in the public sphere recently. I will just highlight this, that when I was looking at some of different topic but related Portland Clean Energy Fund's proposals around distribution of a lot of those community benefits, I noticed a pretty large piece that seems similar in approach, right? Looking for interested owners on a smaller, maybe like unit by unit, single family home by single family home approach. And it just, as I was hearing this, I was thinking, gosh, I wonder if they're going to run into some of those same adoption barriers. And it feels like it would be beneficial for them to take a look at some of these outcomes here.
Agreed. And we've had some initial conversations with them. And I agree. I feel it, again, like the conversation around like the carrot versus stick sort of approach will come up again. It's going to be that challenge of, owners of private market rental housing are going to be adverse to having their units regulated.
Or adverse to a point,
Right,
what
to a point.
is that long-term cost, right? And then what's the balance there? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that that's a really interesting conversation to have, to see at what point does the reluctance to participate in something like this sort of decrease because there's a value. So I think, not to put it too crudely, but sort of, what's in it for me look. So more of the carrot, I guess.
Yeah. It may be possible at some point in the future. I don't know if the Portland Clean Energy Fund is there yet, but it seems like it would be possible to maybe create some sort of combined program, right? Here where we're talking about, rental rehab, and then as part of that may include like, cooling devices, and because I know they're saying that at least for their some of the work that they're trying to do at PSEF, I mean, they are looking at pretty large scale investments in properties as well.
Yeah, and I just think, again, I mean, we're not here to debate PSEF, but I just think, and I have a bias here as someone in the multifamily rental world, that the adoption rate on that side will be significantly higher than on the sort of smaller single family home side, and that the sort of like bang for the buck will look different too, and maybe the absolute benefit to tenants and to owners and to the community and environment will be greater. And yet, I'm not saying, those other units should be left behind, right? They're part of our housing stock. It's just interesting to think about some of the barriers you highlighted.
Awesome. Thank you, Antoinette. Can everyone hear me? My internet went out. I'm on my phone hotspot, so I'm gonna keep my camera off because it's
We
freaking.
great.
Yeah,
Okay.
we can hear you loud and clear.
Okay.
So Justin, then I guess we'll plan on. Thanks for being my practice presentation. We'll go ahead and plan on then giving this presentation to the full Rental Services Commission, and then possibly making some recommendations then too.
Sounds good to me. Great.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Antoinette.
Thank you
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
I'm going to hop off now.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Antoinette. And then so The next thing on our agenda is the presentation around rent assistance's effect on the rental market. And this is some research that Brianne did before she left. And so I know it's been requested several times. So I will go ahead and present on this briefly. It's 6 slides. And frankly, honestly, there needs to be a lot more research done. And it's kind of out of the scope of our capacity to engage in that research. It's it was pretty robust by the federal government when it was done in the 70s and 80s. And so that's the information that we found. Ryan, are you able to allow me to share my screen?
Yeah, just one sec. Okay, there you go.
You're the best, thank you. Okay, share. Can everyone see this? Okay, thank you. And so rent assistance and rent increases. So we'll go ahead and dive in. So the housing, so the, most of this research that Brianne found was from the 70s and 80s. And so, you know, at the infancy of the voucher program in a very different environment than we have now housing wise. So the Housing Act of 1970 authorized HUD to test housing allowances. Assistance was tenant-based rather than landlord-based, and tenant received the difference between the standard rent and 25% of their income. So the fully funded program ran in Green Bay, Wisconsin and South Bend, Indiana between 1974 and 1984. This is the Housing Assistance Supply Experiment, excuse me. The HAIS, so we'll go on to the HAIS study findings. And the HAIS study was commissioned by HUD, completed by the RAND Corporation, and reviewed the program data from 1974 to 1975. So the HAIS study, tenant-based subsidy, encouraged tenants to bargain for rent as they kept whatever savings they negotiated. So tight test markets in Green Bay with a vacancy rate of around 4%. Rents rose for assistance recipients by 1.6% in the first year, and estimated a 3.5 increase within 3 years. The loose test market, which was in South Bend, Indiana, with a vacancy rate around 10%, rents rose for assistance recipients by 0.7% in the first year, and an estimated 2.5% increase within 3 years. When researchers applied the model to other cities, worst case increases estimated to be around 4.8% increases. Pre-program tenants paid on average 50% of income on rent. Post-program, 25% of the income was paid on rent, which is kind of in the program. Despite being fully funded, on average, only 66% of eligible households were enrolled at a time. And that is the HAIS study. So moving on to Section 8, the existing housing program, authorized by HUD in 19...
Justin, we lost your audio.
No, I was just going to say, Justin, if you can hear us, we lost your audio.
We're set and required.
Hey, Justin, this is Ian. We lost you when you are on the first bullet. We don't know the year, except that we can read it. Can you start over up there?
Yeah, can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Totally.
Okay, thank you. Authorized by HUD in 1974, assistance paid to the landlord rather than the tenant. Local public housing authorities set them fair market rents, and minimal habitability standards were set. The program rolled out initially with $1.3 billion in vouchers nationwide, a nationwide HUD study in 1976 covering 1,600 households. Moving on here. In this study, the data was compiled in 1976 and published in 1978. The Section 8 existing housing findings. So recipients who did not move units but simply became eligible saw an average rent increase of 28%. Recipients who had to move to a unit that met habitability standards saw an average rent increase of 70%. Some recipients who moved and experienced a rent increase reported that they were previously under-consuming housing, including multiple households living in one unit, performing work for a lower rent, crowding into units with too few bedrooms. So, you know, that's definitely going to have a likely effect on why people. So that's an 8% increase because they're moving into housing that is suitable for them and their families. Pre-program tenants paid on average 40% of income on rent. Post-program, about 22% on rent. 40% of landlords reported raising rent to fund immediate repairs. 35% reported raising rent in order to meet the FMR standard. 39% of landlords reported using a formal lease for the first time in 1974 when this program was rolled out. And then, let's see here, caveats and context. These studies are nearly 50 years old, and with the first large-scale shocks of rent assistance in dependent markets. PACE only deployed in two cities. Section 8 at the time of the study was very underutilized as well. Housing and economic conditions, as we all know, have changed immensely. Much deeper research will be needed to further explore this topic, including how rent assistance impacts the wider market for low or moderate income eligible renter households, how the demolition of public housing impacted rents, how the prevalence of vouchers as assistance in a market impacts rents, and what, if any, impacts the unprecedented COVID-19 rent assistance had on rents. And that's kind of the short overview that we were able to provide. Again, the research is 50 years old, and Breon did a deep dive into it. And this is the only most recent findings that she could find. And it's really outside of PHB's scope to conduct a study on this, but wanted to bring it to the group since there have been multiple requests for any information around it. Laura?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Justin, for sharing this, and thanks to Breon. I appreciate this. It's fascinating, but I don't really think it helps us get to the sort of the issue that we were trying to get to. I mean, maybe it does in a very tiny way, but I think it's the data is so historical.
Yes.
Reflects what was happening 50 years ago, which I think, you know, again, I think that's great. But I think that the issue that we're trying to understand now is, you know, what is happening now with more rent assistance, both, you know, primarily locally funded and controlled long-term rent assistance. What impact is that having on the increase in rents? And so for me, this feels like, I mean, one, it's important information to know that in-depth research on this particular question is outside of PHB's scope. So that's good to know. Secondly, I think maybe we have to go back and say, okay, is this something that we want to pursue? Is this a question that we want to pursue? Personally, I think it is, because I think it's a statement, an assumption that keeps coming up and that is concerning to me, that we've got people who continue to say that rent assistance drives rents up, because I just want to know if that's actually true, because rent assistance also keeps people in housing, you know, which
exactly.
is crazy. And then my other question would be, what resources does PHB have to subcontract with an entity to do this research? Is this something that the Rental Services Commission could request that PHB contract with the Eco Northwest to do, or something like that? So those are my thoughts.
Thank you, Laura. And yeah, I definitely agree. The data is very historical, and it's not particularly touching on exactly what we're looking for. I'll ask those questions about what resources we have to put towards, you know, conducting a study around this and get back to the group with via email more than likely with that answer, just see if, you know, to see if that's a realistic possibility. Is this something we want to present to the larger group, or keep that just for the exec committee?
Well, thank you, Justin, for being willing to dig further about the resources. I don't know that it would be worth it to present this to the entire RSC. I don't know. I don't think so, but that's my opinion. Christian and Ian may think differently.
Christian and Ian, what are your thoughts around this resource? I mean, at the very least, we could, you know, have a disclaimer that we did do some research and, you know, be transparent with what we found and what's available and the PHB's ability to conduct this further. But what are your thoughts around sharing this presentation itself with the larger group?
Yeah, I think I agree with that, and that we need to, at the very least, let them know that we did look into it, and, you know, maybe, you know, just kind of a high level, you know, overview.
Perfect. That works for me. I'll defer to Laura and Christian on this one.
That frees up some space in the agenda then, so it's less presentation heavy. Awesome.
And hey, Justin, big appreciation to Brian for, I heard you say diving deep and probably reading very exploring
stuff. Very old studies reading at her desk. So yeah. I really appreciate the work that she did before she went on leave. She had printed out all these studies and was looking at them via paper. So in the work. Perfect. Well, Brian, do you mind sharing the agenda again? I want to just make both in time for going over the proposed RSC agenda for next month.
Yeah, let me just get it pulled back up again.
Thank you. Awesome. Well, thank you, Brian. So looking at the proposed agenda for next month, I'm going to remove the rent assistance and the rental market presentation, freeing up some additional time. The listening session follow-up will take probably a decent amount of time, and I'll add in a little area for staff updates around what we just discussed around having completed done a deep dive and not being able to find the research and being transparent with our findings. Is there anything else missing from this agenda we want to put on there? There are some legislative updates around SB 611 that I think are appropriate to touch on, namely that it's waiting for governor's signature, and then once we have it, it'll pass. I think we should add that in. I also wanted to flag HB 3417, which I'm going to put in the chat. It's relating to our conversation around, you know, incentives for landlords. This, you know, is the Housing and Community Services Department shall develop and implement the Housing Choice Landlord Guarantee Program for the purpose of providing financial assistance to landlords to mitigate damages caused by tenants as a result of occupancy who have received rental assistance. That's the takeaway from that. And this, the amounts are related to property damage, unpaid rent, or other damages, which I think is relevant to our discussion around, you know, citywide Portland programs that are incentivizing landlords to keep rents low. So I wanted to bring those two items to the group to see if we want to include them in the agenda and how we want to tackle that, if at all.
That sounds good.
Okay. Yeah, I think so.
I will build in some time to just go over those briefly. And And then, so I did have a conversation. I think it's appropriate in this area to talk with us now with Amber Cook yesterday. And I told her I'd bring her concerns to the executive committee, really around, our time frame, agenda setting, and time frame for recommendations. There is, after our last meeting, she was very concerned about the pace that we are moving and our ability to make recommendations in a timely manner, specifically around how much time was spent on presentations last time. I was transparent with her around, when requests are made, I presentations, have to be made as well when data is requested. But she was heavily concerned around the rates that we are the rate that we are working. And it's really relating to having six less meetings per year. But I told her I'd bring that information to the group and the RSC exec committee to see if there's anything we want to address the group at large around the pace that we are going. I'm not sure if these sentiments are felt, broadly throughout the group, but yeah, Laura.
I saw Ian was
Oh.
off. Did you want to go, Ian? Well, so I guess I'm assuming, but I don't want to assume, so I just clarifying question. Is Amber saying we're moving too slowly? Is that her
Yes.
concern that we're moving too slowly, that we need to move more quickly to make recommendations? Because if we don't, we're missing the time frame doesn't align with the opportunity to take timely action.
Exactly. Yeah, she was concerned that our lack of recommendations for this year, and concerned about when we'll be able to actually make recommendations in the current housing environment that we have, the homelessness environment that we are seeing in Portland. So that was her main concern around everything.
Okay. I okay, thank you.
Welcome. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, but I don't know if I mean, I think we're always definitely open to any way we might be able to be more efficient, but unfortunately, it is also just kind of nature of the beast with these committees. There's only so fast you can go with having the number of meetings we have and the number of hours in it.
Yes. And this is something I explained to her as well. Go ahead, Ian.
I was just going to ask, like Amber's very thoughtful, if there were any suggestions, right? Because I hear Christian saying what I often feel with the group, which is, gosh, we have so little time, and then want to go. And it's interesting because I felt like I've heard desires to go deeper on some items. I mean,
Yes.
the research you just showed us is a great example of that, where we are now talking about like a subset of a subset of a subset of a potential concern. Which is fine, but it's a group that has a lot of priorities. And so I would just be curious to know, like, what are the areas where, and maybe this is a question for the group, but did Amber share any where we could shift?
No, that was not part of the conversation. And as far as the request to go deeper, I did explain all this to Amber with the request to go deeper, and doing our due diligence to be informed before making recommendations, absolutely. But wanted to sh yeah, but there were no suggestions on how to fix it or like ideas going forward. And so I told her I would share her concerns with the exec committee. And these are some issues she kind of voiced by a chat directly to me during the last RSC meeting. And so I wanted to prep for that possibility again as well.
What was the topic in the RSC meeting? I'm trying to put it in context a little bit. Do you recall, was it during the listening session or was it?
No, the full body session, how much time we spent on presentations last time.
But do you remember what the presentations were? I'm just trying to remember what was the content that.
Yeah, it's been a while. One was, I'll just look them up really fast. It's been so long. It feels like.
Sorry, Justin. Yeah, I'm straining.
No, you're good. They're readily available. Landlord incentives and legislative updates. And then you did a presentation on rent assistance.
Oh, right. Yep.
So, yeah, sorry, Ian, did I cut you off? Were you going to say something else? Yeah, I feel like we may need as a body to bring this to the body and maybe have a vote or a fist to five or some mechanism where we collectively agree about balancing gaining in-depth knowledge, which informs our recommendations versus moving quickly. I mean, I personally feel like there's a risk of moving too quickly without having all the information. At the same time, I can see that with only six meetings and we're a public body, we have to follow those rules, that it you know, we don't want to get bogged down in overly complex or time-consuming presentations or information, but I do think that this is maybe something that the whole body should weigh in on. I mean, that would be, I would guess that others probably feel like we could be moving faster, but then I would also say that there are probably people who feel like, yeah, I can't weigh in on a decision without some additional information. I think the other thing that's important to keep in mind is that as we deliberate these things, is there an expectation that, okay, you know, somebody would go off and do their own research on their own time, or, you know, and would that mean having access to different amounts of information? I think it gets a little complicated. Anyway, just some top of mind thoughts there. And it would also be interesting to ask Amber if she had suggestions specifically for what we could do.
Ian? Thank you, Laura.
Yeah, well, I agree with Laura there. You know, one thing that, like, I'm trying to strain my brain a little bit and challenge us is there has been a request, or at least I've heard this voiced, for more committee work or like outside of the formal meetings work. Let's just be frank, like we have been resistant to move that forward. And I think that is because it's a public body and people have other jobs and personal lives, et cetera. But we might hear that suggestion, like, let us come back to the group with recommendations that take 10 minutes instead of broad presentations and discussions that take 90 minutes. And I don't know. I mean, I revert back to, like, I'm not able to do anything outside of my day to day, but there may be others who are. And I think we should be flexible and sort of challenge ourselves around trying to, like, sort of hold too much power if we think that that's a suggestion that could work and does work for some people, but setting expectations that this doesn't work for everyone. And that means that there may only be a handful of voices that are doing that work, thus putting extra burden on those folks, but potentially shifting the recommendations or the opportunity for, you know, broader or more balanced input.
Thank you, Ian. Laura?
Yeah, thanks, Ian. That sort of echoes a little bit of what I was thinking. I think that, yeah, we could definitely ask for and talk about suggestions about, let's take 10 minutes for a presentation instead of 90, or a 15-minute presentation and email the slideshow and then allow time for Q&A. I think what, you know, I think that there's compliance with the public meeting laws that require a lot more planning. So if we want to share a slideshow and then get Q&A, you know, do we have to have that slideshow presented in advance, blah, blah, blah. So there's that. As for the committee work, I'm in the same boat as Ian. I don't have additional capacity to do work outside of, you know, in addition to what we're already doing. But I don't necessarily object to the committees as long as they're structured well and if they can be supported to meet the guidelines of the public meeting laws. I think that what I've heard is that a formal committee with more than a certain number of members of the RSC has to comply with public meeting laws, and there needs to be staffing availability. If those things can be met and the committee can be responsive to what the full body wants, that's great. I think that we're still going to end up in a situation where somebody is gonna, maybe me, maybe somebody else is gonna want additional information before being able to weigh in on a recommendation. So I think we just have to understand that maybe perhaps the nature of this work, that finding a way to make this work faster means giving up some other things, like more voices at weighing in on, and you know, everybody getting their questions answered. That might not be possible if we're going to trade that for expedient. But hey, I'm all for, you know, bringing this is a challenge, and all for bringing it to the full body and hearing what the rest of the group says.
Gotcha. Christian, any thoughts about this outside of what's already been shared?
No, I think I definitely agree with what Laura said.
Okay. Perfect. I'll go ahead and make some space on the agenda for us to discuss this up top before the presentation. And then I'll come to the meeting ready with information regarding subcommittees and what that would require for them to operate. That sounds good.
Great. Thank you, Justin, for getting ready for that possible and likely question.
Absolutely. And the last two things on our agenda, you know, these both popped up during my one-on-one meeting with commissioners. They aren't necessarily items that have to be discussed now or high alert items. So I'll go ahead and put them on an agenda for a future RSC exec committee meeting. But just follow up protocol when we do make recommendations and the chat feature and its role within our body. But we can discuss those at a later date. Awesome. Well, it's 3:00 on the dot. Don't want to hold you any longer. I hope you all have a great day.
Thanks all.
Thank you, everyone.
Ryan, bye. Just feel better.